Discovering the will of God is one thing. Following His will is quite another, meaning unraveling the mystery of God's will and following His plan with diligence is not an easy path. In fact, sometimes following the will of God includes barriers, doubt, and even pushback from the people who love us the most. Today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll pulls back the curtain on this topic to expose the fallacies that betray us and the surprises that delight us. Chuck titled his message, Fleshing Out the Will of God.
Now, tucked away in the 11th of Hebrews is the definition, a very general definition for faith. In verse 6, at least it's a series of words that have become familiar to us as we read them. Without faith, it is impossible to please Him. The Him has reference to the previous verse, our living God. Notice the last word of verse 5. So verse 6 goes back, modifies God in verse 5. Without faith, it is impossible to please God. For he who comes to God must believe two things. Must believe that he is, and must believe that he is a rewarder of those who seek him. Keep looking at that verse. If I were to paraphrase faith according to verse 6, I would say, as I define it, it's believing God is who he says he is, and God will do what he says he will do. I want that verse to really link itself to you. Seldom do we read the word impossible in Scripture. Here we do. Without faith, pleasing him is impossible. It'd be fun to paraphrase that in a dozen different ways, wouldn't it? Be helpful, probably. But just the words, without faith, pleasing him is impossible. Now, it's my responsibility as God's spokesman to inform you and to instruct you correctly and to challenge you and to exhort you. But I want to tell you, the hardest part of instructing and exhorting is modeling this. I can say it easier and better than I can live it. God has a way of honing and shaping his messengers. John Stott said it clearly. The preacher who declares the word with authority is under that word and must submit to its authority himself. Although distinct from the generation, from the congregation, he is one of them. He is conscious that the word he preaches applies to himself as much as to anyone else. So I want you to know something today, very candidly. I don't want to lay a thing on you that I am not willing to do myself. And I give you my word, and I say it before God, that as I talk about it being difficult and convoluted, I know that from experience, and I'll go through that again. There have been times that Cynthia and I were literally at a loss to know what God was up to. But we knew staying where we were was not his plan. That is a tough place to be. Because we knew he was up to something, we wanted to be engaged in it. We didn't know fully what that required, and we were restless trying to figure it out. Now, I've said all of this to ready us for four examples. There, if we count Joshua, who isn't named, there are 16 examples in Hebrews 11 by name, if I've counted them correctly. Now, don't start doing that, because if you start to do that, you won't hear anything else that's said. But I believe there are a little over a dozen names here that we could go to, but we're going to center on four of them. I want to focus on these four because I think they modeled faith and action, release and risk. And I don't believe we can get a better list, and so we're going to settle on these. What I want you to see is a realistic set of examples of people who did God's will by faith, but found that it was not simple, nor easy, nor comfortable. First, Abel. Verse 4. By faith, Abel offered to God a better sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained the testimony that he was righteous. God testifying about his gifts, and through faith, though he is dead, he still speaks. You've heard the phrase, he being dead still speaks. That's where it comes from. Hebrews 11:4, it has reference to Abel. Now, without turning back to Genesis 4, 1-8, where the story originates, we know today that Abel is a man who was born to Adam and Eve, had a brother named Cain, and when they reached the maturity, Abel was a shepherd and Cain was a farmer. And when it came time to offering their sacrifices to God, obviously God had made it clear to them in some way, not set forth in Scripture, but implied, that that which pleased God was an animal sacrifice. And Cain brought from his crops and offered them to God in great sincerity. And Cain came hoping to connect with his God and bring this these gifts before God, which were the results of his hand, his planting and his harvesting. God wasn't pleased with that gift. Abel came with an animal sacrifice, and God was pleased with that gift. Abel came by faith, probably knowing that his brother did not offer the same kind of offering. And so he came with this blood sacrifice, and he offered it before God, and God, according to verse 4, claimed that he was righteous, and he came by faith with his offering. Though his brother disagreed and acted out a different plan, Abel brought what he believed by faith was God's will. And it infuriated Cain that God did not accept his offering. You know the story. He murdered his brother. We're not into the Bible five chapters before we find one person killing another. Now, I could go into a lot of other things, but since we're on the subject of God's will, let me apply it. Sometimes doing, and I think Abel illustrates this, sometimes doing the will of God will disturb your closest family members, resulting in great pressure, relational turmoil, angry words, and perhaps hostile actions or reactions. Sometimes doing God's will, as Abel did, will disturb your immediate family members. But please remember, you are not on this earth as a child of God to please your family members. Now be careful where you go with that. There's a lot of balancing comments I could make on it. We're not here deliberately to make our family members nervous. That's not the balanced answer to that. It's we want to be so committed to our Heavenly Father that we know clearly and distinctly what His plan is. We're not here to please our sons and daughters or our mothers and dads. This is where the breakdown comes in the teaching of this hard and fast chain of command rule that has been laid on us by some teachers in our day. Sometimes our moms and dads are wrong. My parents didn't believe Cynthia was the best mate for me. They were wrong. They didn't know her. Now, there were other extenuating circumstances that we wish we could have cleared up so that they would have known her better. But looking back, had I listened, I would not have married the woman I should have married. That's a pretty vulnerable comment to tell all of you, but it's true. Now, moms and dads usually have, if they're believers and if they're walking with the Lord and if they have, you know, that kind of maturity, they're usually real good counselors on most things, but they don't walk on water. Sometimes moms and dads are wrong. In this case, a brother is wrong. Had Abel listened to his brother, Cain would have said, look at all the crops. I mean, this makes sense. God would want a portion of this. Look at these beautiful crops he's caused to come to fulfillment, and let's take him together with him. Let's agree on this. And Abel brought his sacrifice to God. That's what God wanted. At the crisis of belief, faith and obedience must fail. Releasing and risking will be required. And Abel illustrates that very well. Perhaps that's the best of the four illustrations for you. Because it just may be that in your life, your immediate family represents the most difficult part of your working to do the will of God. You can't please both if they're working against God's will. Okay? Now, the ideal is that both are fulfilled and happy. God is satisfied with your walk because you're pleasing Him, and your family understands that and releases you to do that. It's a good time for me to add, parents, one of our great jobs is to be responsible for rearing our children and then releasing our children. Children don't need the oversight and constant care or advice from parents as they are grown. We found the hard way that children who are grown best receive advice when they ask for it. We have advice nobody's asking for at times. We got answers to questions nobody's asking. We're just waiting for them to ask them. We found the hard way that we need to let them grow and be and do. That's part of parenting. It's a tough part. You don't stop loving them or caring for them, especially when you think they're making a wrong decision. Anyway, that's no extra charge for that. Just threw that in. Here's the second example. Enoch, it gets a little more personal each time. I love the story of Enoch. The story is revealed in Genesis 5, 21 to 24. We won't turn. We'll just read the one verse Reader's Digest version of it, verse 5 of Hebrews 11. By faith, Enoch was taken up so that he should not see death, and he was not found, which means they looked for him on this earth, but they couldn't find Enoch because God took him up, says it again, doesn't it? He was taken up, the first part of the verse. God took him up, the middle of the verse, for he obtained the witness that before his being taken up, third time in one verse, he was pleasing to God. How do you please God? Verse 6, that's why it comes on the heels of verse 5. I have a great grasp of the obvious, don't I? Verse 6 follows verse 5, all right? Without faith, it's impossible to please God, which tells us Enoch's walk was a walk of faith. He was the father of Methuselah. Did you know that? Methuselah came along, and Enoch walked with God every day for the rest of his life. And the only memory Methuselah had of Enoch is that his daddy walked with God. Wow. And then God took him. And in light of how long people lived, especially Methuselah, Enoch was a very young man when God took him. It's what we would call a premature departure. Now you know where I'm going, don't you? Let me apply it. Sometimes a person's incredible life of obedience is underscored by a premature death. Sometimes a person's remarkable, incredible life of obedience is just underscored by their being taken up. In the 1950s, the mid-1950s, five men, Jim Elliot, Nate Saint, Roger Yoderian, Ed McCauley, and Peter Fleming, had on their hearts the reaching of the Alka Indians in South America. Most of them from Wheaton College, all of them becoming friends in this mission to evangelize the Alkas. And that began by reaching these headhunters, this tribe of very hostile Indians. Hostile in the sense that they were ignorant of the whole world about them, and any encroachment into their tribe could be life-threatening, and indeed was. All five died. Some of them found in the Kurei River with a spear through the body. Their plane was destroyed like a large bird that had come into this tribe to take advantage of them. And the Indians didn't understand. And they slaughtered 5 godly men. The pilot, Nate Saint, leaving his wife, Marge, and Jim Elliott leaving his wife, Elizabeth. And we could go right down the line. And I've had the privilege of meeting most of those widows, having dinner with Olive, was once Olive Fleming, now the wife of a prophet, Trinity Seminary. And they tell this story, and to this day, tears hang in their eyelids as they talk about the shock of sitting at that place when someone told them that they found their husbands. Still puts a chill up the back of my neck when I tell that story. Elizabeth Elliot wrote a book, Through Gates of Splendor, that described the slaughtered scene. I was a young Marine, disillusioned because I had to go overseas, visited my brother with my sea bag on my shoulder. I was leaving his home in Pasadena to go back to Camp Pendleton. We were gonna do a staging regiment in San Diego and then take off on a troop ship. And in 1958, January, cold month of January, my brother said to me, "Charles, here's a book I want you to read." I said, "I'm not interested in reading." He said, "I didn't ask if you're interested in reading. I want you to read this book." And I said, "I'm not going to read the book." He shoved it in my sea bag, and he said, "Once you start, you'll never be able to put it down." I was on a bus, rain-splattered window. I still remember it like it was day before yesterday. And I'm riding from Pasadena down to Camp Pendleton, away from my wife, lonely, disillusioned, disappointed, a little despairing of life, and thought that as a Christian, God would not allow us to be separated like this. And I began reading Through Gates of Splendor, and it absolutely transformed my thinking. And the story of those 5 men, I couldn't put it down. I sat in the men's room, which is the only place in the Marine base that had lights all night, and I looked like a nut sitting in the bathroom reading a book all through the night. Couldn't go to sleep, finished it, and on the troop ship going over 17 days at sea, I read it again. And while on Okinawa, I read it a third time. And I've since told Elizabeth Elliot that it was God used it to turn my heart toward ministry and missions. And who knows how many other thousands, how many other tens of thousands from 5 lives whose faith was so deep and lives so obedient that God said, "You come on home with me now." And the grieving of all those widows notwithstanding, God used that. I brought with me a memorial service bulletin. The man, most of you, maybe none of you know, Chris Boring, K-R-I-S. Chris Boring was one of our top students at Dallas Seminary. Born in 1970, Chris was a valedictorian in his high school, top of his class in college, came to seminary, wonderful student, master of theology, teaching aide, assistant alongside Mark Bailey, our academic dean of students, and just a terrific guy. Gave his degree to him, I handed it to him last May, and he and his fiancée, thinking God's plan was for them to serve him in the mission field, went together to look into a particular ministry opportunity. While there, he got a virus, and in 2.5 weeks after a raging fever, he died. On August 21, 1998, a little over 28 years and 4 months old. And we buried him at a memorial service. There it is. There's the obituary. I cut it out of the Dallas Morning News. I looked at that face, and I remembered when he was standing on that platform and got that degree. And I remember him saying to me after graduation, "I just can't wait. Now I can go. I'm all prepared." And God took it. Who knows how many lives, because of Chris Boring's premature death, will suddenly be made aware of God's plan for them through his death. I don't know. I can't figure those kind of things out. Part of this is a big mystery to me. But here is a modern-day Enoch who walked with God and God took him. This will help you when it comes close to home. The point is, sometimes a person's life of obedience is underscored by a premature death. It will help you resist the questions, why and how could you, Lord? While attending this memorial service, I heard one student after another state this last fall, this last summer, how this death has now riveted into them the importance of serving Christ with greater devotion. Who knows if they would feel that if Chris had not been taken. And I don't want to take that any further. I just know that, according to the Scriptures, precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his godly ones. That's Enoch. Now the third mentioned to for us in mentioned to us in verse 11, 7 is Noah. By faith, Noah, being warned by God about things not yet seen, in reverence. Love that. In reverence, prepared an ark for the salvation of his household, by which he condemned the world and became an heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. Peter tells us in 2 Peter 2:5 that Noah was a preacher of righteousness. Did you know that? Not just an ark builder, and not just a man who found grace in the eyes of the Lord, according to Genesis chapter 6, verses 8 to 22, which tell the story of Noah before the flood. He was a preacher of righteousness. It took 120 years between God's telling Noah that there would be a flood and the ark being built and the first sprinkles of rain. So for 120 years, think of that, longer than any of us will live, Noah built an ark. It came, according to Genesis chapter 6, at a time when the depravity of man was enormous. God saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, Genesis 6:5, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. But Noah was different. He was sensitive to God. He heard God's message. God warned him a flood was coming. He's going to judge the earth, build this ark so that the animals can be preserved and your family can be saved and whoever else. So for 120 years, he gathered the materials. He built this ark in a world that had never known rain. In that era called the antediluvial era, the earth was watered from below. There had not been rain. And Noah's building this ark among people who've never seen rain as he preaches the flood's coming, judgment's coming, and he's surrounded by these reprobates, these unsaved, depraved contemporaries of his. And this preacher of righteousness by faith is standing against the tide of his time. That's Noah. His faith was scorned, his life was mocked, and he risked being accepted and a part of the group by continuing to build this ark in his front yard or wherever he built it. Application. Sometimes our faith is such a rebuke to our peers and our times that we suffer persecution because of it. And the real application is, don't expect overwhelming approval and affirmation just because you've chosen to walk by faith.
Some great wisdom right out of the Bible. When walking in obedience to God's plan, we aren't always going to get approval from our friends and family. You're listening to Insight for Living and the Bible teaching of Chuck Swindoll. He's midway through a message titled, Fleshing Out the Will of God. On tomorrow's program, Chuck will venture into the practical application of this topic. And then you'll be pleased to learn that all 11 messages in this teaching series are available right now on audio CD. To purchase the complete collection, just ask for the audio series called The Mystery of God's Will when you call 800-772-8888. If you prefer listening on your mobile device, just download the Insight mobile app, where you can access our growing library of Chuck sermons for free. Did you realize that every message in this series on the will of God is paired with a Searching the Scriptures Bible study? This is an exclusive spiral-bound workbook prepared by the creative team at Insight for Living. For these two resources, the Searching the Scriptures Bible Study workbook and the audio CDs for Chuck's study on the mystery of God's will, just go to insight.org/offer. It's possible you've been following Chuck's teaching for several decades. In the early days, maybe you had little financial margin because of the demands of raising a young family. During that season, it was the generous giving from other listeners that made it possible for you to hear Chuck's teaching. Today, you're likely in a stronger position. If that's the case, let me encourage you to step forward and become one of our monthly companions. January is the perfect time to start a new discipline of generosity. By giving a monthly donation in the amount of your choice, you can do for someone else what others did for you back in the early days. Here's the number to call, 800-772-8888, and you can sign up at insight.org/monthly companion. I'm Bill Meyer. Join us when Chuck Swindoll continues his message called Fleshing Out the Will of God, tomorrow on Insight for Living. The preceding message, Fleshing Out the Will of God, was copyrighted in 1998, 2000, and 2024, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2024 by Charles R. Swindoll, Incorporated. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.